this edition, it's a joy to have best-selling author and philosopher Mark Nepo making a return visit to the program. We'll be talking about several of his books, and the conversation begins now. Mark Nepo, the New York Times best-selling author of The Book of Awakening, has been called one of the finest spiritual guides of our time, a consummate storyteller, and an eloquent spiritual teacher. Now in his 60s, he's written a brand new book, Reduced to Joy, a book of 73 poems about the nature of working with what we're given until it wears us through to joy. Nepo says, "Poetry is the well from which all my books rise. It's where I always go to listen, always stunned by what arrives. I bring these poems back from the deep, like shells from the sea, that we can look at together." Profound and accessible, Nepo's poems are tools for staying close to what matters. Mark Nepo is a poet and philosopher who's taught in the fields of poetry, health, and spirituality for 40 years. As a New York Times number one best-selling author, he's written 14 books and recorded 8 audio projects. Mark has also appeared with Oprah Winfrey on OWN's TV's Super Soul Sunday repeated times and has also been interviewed by Robin Roberts on Good Morning America. His work has been translated into more than 20 languages. In 1987, Mark was diagnosed with a rare form of lymphoma. The heart of that journey and its aftermath has greatly informed his work ever since. He's been a student of all paths. His work explores a common center and unity of all spiritual traditions, focusing on how we can experience that unity when we can lean into life and hold nothing back. And ultimately, he encourages us to live wholeheartedly so we can inhabit the gifts that we're born with and find the language of our own wisdom. It's always a joy to have Mark with us. We're going to be talking about not only his new book, but also his book, The 7,000 Ways to Listen, which was released not really that long ago. And he's joining us from his home in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Mark Nepo, it's a joy to have you on the program.
Well, it's great to be with you. Thanks. It's great to be with you again.
Yes.
We talked before.
Well, actually, the last time you were on the show, we talked about your book, The Book of Awakening, and what a deeply moving contribution that was. And since then, you've had a few other releases, the two most recent being 7,000 Ways to Listen and Reduced to Joy, a book of poetry that was just released. I want to talk to you a bit about the inspirations behind your poetry, the book, 7,000 Ways to Listen, and then, of course, your most recent creation. So I guess my first question is, you've been writing poetry from the heart and inspiring others for many years, and your poetry has the ability to touch the heart, speaking to each reader through familiar experience and circumstance with really thought-provoking verse. What's your process for writing these soul-inspiring pieces?
Well, and, you know, thank you. I think, you know, over a lifetime, I've really come to understand poetry not as verses or the way lines are arranged on a page, but really as the unexpected utterance of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as I've moved through life, as we all do through experience, but particularly I'm 62 and in my 30s, as you know, I struggled with cancer. And
yes.
Almost died, and waking up on the other side of that, through no wisdom of mine, I was dropped into my heart. And so, you know, really ever since then, the things that lead me to poetry are a feeling, a question, a concern, you know, anything that moves me from my center,
mm-hmm.
I inquire into, I enter a conversation with. And the trail of that conversation winds up being the poem.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I imagine it's a process of feeling things, too. You strike me as somebody who's very much from the heart.
Well, yeah, thank you. And I think, you know, one of the things, too, is I'm very visual. And when I feel things, then you know, because often the life of the heart is and the life of everything that matters is below words.
Yes, yes.
And so, you know, feelings often are accompanied by images.
Mm.
And it's like pulling a thread and seeing where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, so, you know, a lot of my poems and my writing, I mean, really my prose writing, I don't really make those distinctions. To me, it's poetry just on a larger canvas.
Yes.
So, you know, it's just poetry in paragraphs as opposed to lines. And it's always a sense of trying to, well, let's put it this way. If when I am honest in what I'm feeling, chances are what I touch on will be meaningful to others, not mm-hmm. because I'm trying to reach others, but because at the very heart of it all, mm-hmm. we all drink from the same well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, right, yeah, so if I happen to touch that well, then the details may be different, but it will touch you. And if you, then same way, if you touch on that, then it will touch me.
I always felt that your prose was like poetry. It always has reminded me of the writings of John O'Donohue, who I believe was also such a beautiful writer, no matter what it was, whether it was a blessing, a poem, or prose. But there was this rhythm to it all. You know, the last time you were on the show, we talked about your Book of Awakening, and it's become such a hit since then, inspiring so many hearts, I mean, continually. I imagine you're joyful to have touched so many people. So tell me, are you happy with how it's been received so far?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. You know, I mean, you know, books are like kids, you know. You hope when they leave the house they behave, you know. So, no, I'm thrilled. And you know, at this point in my life, and I think the way that I've understood this journey in a body through time, mm-hmm. you know, we're all taught in one way that the journey of life is some kind of climb. Mm. Well, I think that, you know, I've learned it's all horizontal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're really not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's lots to do and there's nothing to do. And,
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, to me, what's happened with my work is like ripples in a pond. The ripples have gone farther than I ever imagined, and it's a joy and a blessing. But I'm really, you know, growing and learning and doing the same thing I've done for years. And so, you know, in terms of it, my being in a different place because of all of that,
mm-hmm.
no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like it's given me tremendous opportunities to meet people and to be with people and and just, you know, publishing opportunities. You know, I've been publishing for years, but more. So, yeah, I'm just absolutely thrilled. I mean, one thing that touched me, you know, the Book of Awakening has been translated now into like 23 languages.
Oh, it's beautiful. I love hearing that.
It's astonishing.
Yes.
And, you know, and I think one of the moments that was so touching to me is, you know, my grandmother was an immigrant from Russia. And at the turn of the last century, you know, 1910, 11, 12.
Mm-hmm.
And she came to this country not speaking English like so many immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And here, 100 years later, her grandson has a work translated back into her native tongue. So holding the Russian edition was really moving to me, and trying to take that in, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's like wild.
That is beautiful. You know, I have so many favorite lines from that work, but one that still touches me every time I hear it is this. You wrote in the Book of Awakening, "The further I wake into this life, the more I realize that God is everywhere, and the extraordinary is waiting quietly beneath the skin of all that is ordinary. Light is in both the broken bottle and the diamond, and music is in both the flowing violin and the water dripping from the drainage pipe. Yes, God is under the porch as well as on top of the mountain, and joy is in both the front row and the bleachers if we are willing to be where we are." Mark, I love the emotion this stirs up, and I wanted to quote it again here because it brings up the importance of being in the present, to notice God's presence in everything. Can you talk about this concept of being present in the moment and truly being mindful of what is right before our very eyes?
Well, you know, it is. And as I've been learning, you know, there's a lot of talk, and rightfully so and happily so, in our time about being in the moment. But I also want to speak a little bit about, because without the kind of attention that we're wanting to bring to it, mm-hmm. it can be turned into a cartoon mm-hmm. of the moment. And so there's the wonders of being in the moment are manifold, and it does involve, you know, as human beings, we're this living paradox where we do have consciousness, we do have mind, we do have memory, we learn, but then very quickly what we learn hardens, and it becomes a film between us and the direct experience of living. And it hardens into assumptions and conclusions and fears and memories that we want to return to almost as a refuge mm-hmm. rather than face life. So part of being in the moment is the courage, the quiet courage, to drop all we know. Mm. The paradox, of course, we grow and we learn and we don't want to start over completely every day, mm-hmm. and yet we do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yet we do. So part of being, you know, that to turn and be in each moment means the courage to drop our conclusions, to drop our assumptions, and to meet life again with nothing between us and the world. And the second kind of great learning for me in the last 10 years or so has been that, you know, one of the rewards for being so present is twofold. One is that I find that we get to experience oneness, not just understand it or glimpse it, but kind of being authentically present is part of the admission ticket to feeling our place in a living universe, as a living mm-hmm. part in a living whole, mm-hmm. whole. Mm-hmm. And the other kind of beautiful thing is that being in the moment fully lets us see differently, and therefore we make different decisions. So yes, being in the moment doesn't mean that we abdicate all responsibility and all relationship and that we are wild without control, although moments might be like that. But what it means is that by being that present, imagine when we climb a hill mm-hmm. and what we see from the top of that hill. So being in a moment is standing on the one spirit that we all come from, standing on our own core, and then in those moments we get to see differently. And now when we enter the stream of existence, now when we have to negotiate the thousand choices, we'll make different decisions mm-hmm. from skiing on that hill mm-hmm. than entangled at the foot of that hill. So these are some of the things that are just so... And it's very true. I mean, I learned this during my cancer journey very strongly that, you know, one of the paradoxes of limitations, especially as we get older, is that God is everywhere, so there's nowhere to go.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. In case you're just joining us, this is the Richard Brendon Show. We're bringing love to life today with best-selling author, poet, and philosopher Mark Nepo. We're going to be talking about his book, Reduced to Joy, and also 7,000 Ways to Listen. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
This WICR program is underwritten in part by Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. They carry organic produce and bulk body care products such as shampoo, lotion, soaps, and shower gel. Their kitchen serves soup, sandwiches, hot entrees, and carryout food. Plus, they have a juice bar. Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. Their website is georgetownmarket.com.
Wellness is an active process of becoming more aware and making better choices that move you in the direction of a more successful life. Choices to eat well, move well, and think well enable your body to live well. When your spine is aligned properly, your brain and body are connected. Stillpoint Family Chiropractic is a family wellness center where we focus on your lifestyle and the impact it has on your spine, brain, and your life. Find us on Facebook at Stillpoint Family Chiropractic, or our phone number is 317-863-0365.
Welcome back to the program. It's a joy to have Mark Nepo return visit here, talking about some more great books that he has coming out. Of course, many of you who are listening know about his book, The Book of Awakening. We touched on that a little bit in the first segment. Mark, right now, I have a few questions for you concerning your book, 7,000 Ways to Listen, Staying Close to What is Sacred. And by the way, I have some friends who are doing a book study on that. That has to be pretty heady, knowing that there's people across the world doing book studies with the books, with your children that you've birthed into the world. I can't imagine.
Well, it's very humbling, to be honest. It's very humbling. And, you know, D.H. Lawrence has a wonderful line, not I, but the wind that blows through me. and of course, it takes, you know, any wind that goes through a tree takes a little bit of its leaves. Mm. So there's a part of me there, but it's, you know, it's being true to what comes through us that joins us all.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of this book, 7,000 Ways to Listen, at the beginning of the book, you talk about an actual experience you had with your physical hearing and the interesting timing associated with the writing of the book in this particular manifestation. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that as I look back at my books, there was no plan looking forward, but as I look back, there's an interesting kind of order to the inquiries, and I consider each book an inquiry. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Book of Awakening is awakening to life and living the life we're given fully. And then, you know, I wrote a book called The Exquisite Risk, and I realized in looking back, well, in each book for me, I think all writers and all artists, whether they admit it or not, we really write and create about what we need to learn. So I wrote a book about risk because I needed to take more risks, and learn. Writing is the inquiry by how I learn, and so if we are awake, then we have to take a risk and live in this wakefulness. And then my next book wound up being about inner courage, and I realized that being awake and taking risks, no matter where my edge was, I needed to learn how to be more courageous. Mm. And so I explored that. And so after that, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Eliot's line about returning to the place in which we started and knowing it for the first time. So awake and taking risks and finding courage, where does it bring us? It brings us back to being here. Mm. It brings us back to being awake. And then we're left with the sacred work of listening. And, you know, and that led me into this book on listening, and there are, you know, it's a metaphor, 7,000 ways to listen. There aren't 7,000 ways listed. But it's really, again, as we were talking earlier about, we obviously don't listen with just our ears. We listen with our whole being. And what does listening really mean if not being and staying in relationship? Staying in relationship with life, with each other, ourselves, with everything larger than us. You know, the book is organized around three sacred friendships. And I say friendships because we don't think of befriending, you know, the universe. Mm-hmm. But it's a living thing. And when we give attention to the forces of life the way we would a friendship, different things happen. So, you know, the book is organized around the work of being and the work of being human and the work of love, and how I've come to explore that is that, you know, our friendship with everything larger than us. Mm. And to me, that's the definition of a mystic. If you believe that there's anything larger than you, then you're a mystic.
Yes.
And, you know, once we start to try to name what it is that's larger than us, then everybody kind of starts going to their corners, their spiritual corners. But as long as we share, like, what's it like to be in relationship with everything larger than us, this opens up a friendship that brings us to the wisdom of Source. Mm. And now, you know, the wisdom of experience, of being human, you know, that our life, our friendship with the life of experience opens up the wisdom of being on Earth. Mm-hmm. And the third, which we know mostly about, is the work of love, is, you know, our friendship with ourselves and each other, it opens up the wisdom of care. And so to get to, you know, that's a rather long introduction, but but while I was working on exploring about listening, I did not realize that my hearing, my physical hearing, was breaking down. And so I have a hearing aid, and you've been very kind in raising the volume for me, and and thank God for these hearing. I mean, anyone who's listening who is reluctant to check their hearing or get a hearing aid, which we all are reluctant for some reason, I'm here to say don't. We live in a miraculous age. This hearing aids today are simply miracles. And so there I was, somehow drawn intuitively to explore all the different ways of healing while my physical hearing, while I was being asked to listen more on the interior because I was hearing less on out in the world. And this, my hearing loss, as I learned finally, really went back all these years ago to the chemo I had when I was going through my cancer journey. And they had destroyed the cilia, or the inner, the small hairs that convey frequencies in our inner ear. And so I have asymmetrical hearing loss, which is usually when people lose hearing just to normal aging, it's symmetrical. And so, you know, this is very, I think, profound, and it leads to a whole listening of intuition. How do we listen to what we don't know? You know, I have a chapter in there about that, and I also have a chapter in there about Beethoven, who, as we kind of legend has it, and we know it's true, but, you know, it's an amazing story of that Beethoven, who went deaf at an early age, and just imagine being given the gift to receive and bring into the world unprecedented music that has never been heard, and you can't hear it played on any instrument.
Isn't that amazing?
And so, you know, especially from my felt sense, and here's a good example of writing about this from the heart, because, you know, our compassion, it doesn't matter whatever it is we go through. When we go through things, one of the goals or the purposes of our suffering, no matter whether it's little or great, is that it opens up permanently our compassion. You know, having been through cancer, I can never meet anyone or hear of anyone in a life-threatening situation. My heart doesn't go there where I don't feel that, you know. And so likewise with the hearing, you know, I inquired into the life of Beethoven differently than before I was losing hearing. And just imagine, I think Beethoven was an amazing example of, and a rare example of an ordinary person carrying extraordinary gifts.
Yes.
And it's the, we all know about his extraordinary gifts, but what is heroic and inspiring, I think, for all of us, for me, for the rest of us, is what he did as an ordinary person meeting these difficulties and working with what he was given. That's just astonishing.
You're listening to The Richard Brendon Show here on WICR. My guest is Mark Nepo, poet and philosopher, best-selling author. We're talking about several of his books, the most recent one, 7,000 Ways to Listen and Also Reduced to Joy. We'll have much more of this conversation right after this short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the program. I'm Richard Brendan. My guest today is Mark Nepo. It's a joy to have him back on this program. Mark, we've been talking about your book, 7,000 Ways to Listen. One of my favorite quotes in this book came after sharing a poem, The Appointment. And you write, "At every turn and every day, we are presented with angels in 1,000 guises, each calling us to follow their song. There is no right or wrong way to go, and only your heart can find the appointments you were born to keep. It's hard to take this risk, but meeting each uncertainty with an open heart will lead us to an authentic tomorrow." That's such a beautiful image, I think, about the entire process of surrendering to uncertainty.
Yeah, thank you. Well, you know, this is you know, paradox is such a teacher, and I feel it's been one of my greatest teachers. And paradox, quite simply, I think, can be understood as any moment where more than two things are true at the same time. And the mind can't solve paradox. The heart can only hold it until a greater order presents itself. And likewise with, you know, the image in the poem there is of going down a street and being drawn by a beautiful bird song. And now how far do you follow it? And it's not that there's a right or wrong, as you were just saying there, reading from the book. Any reception of that gift is a gift. If I simply hear it and continue on my way to work, it's a gift.
Yeah.
If I turn down the street and follow it and try to see the bird and listen more, that's a gift. And I might turn down the street and follow the bird into a new future and never go to work. Now that's a gift, a whole nother gift, isn't it?
Absolutely.
But all along, you know, none of these things, the paradox is that it doesn't mean that we don't keep our appointments. You know, we're friends and I'm going to meet you and you need me. I need always to weigh the appointments that I make and the appointments that the universe makes for me. And there's no right or wrong, but we are all, this is a challenge in the practice of being human. How do we negotiate this? How do we every day know which appointment is ours to keep? And when can I say, well, there'll be another bird because I know that you're in trouble today and I'm your friend and I need to be there. Or I know that, well, today you'll be okay if I'm late because a bird called me.
This book about 7,000 ways to listen, you know, whether it be to friends, to lovers, or even to countries, listening is so key. And in your section on silencing the tiger, you say, "To limit existence to only what we know blinds us to the mystery of how we're all connected. This shrinking of the world has been the cause of violence after violence through the ages, as tribe after tribe and nation after nation has sought to preserve their limited view of all else. This is how important listening is. It is the beginning of peace." And Mark, I love that last part, that listening is the beginning of peace. Let's talk about silencing the tiger for a moment. Do you have some thoughts on how we can open our ears and our hearts to truly listen?
Well, this goes back to being present, which means being vulnerable. And then the risk to, you know, one of the things that happens, understandably, but the work or the practice of being human is to constantly correct this, and that is that our experience of fear, we establish a ring of fear where at that ring where we're not going to let anything or anyone cross that line because we feel our safety is threatened. But the distance between what we imagine that to be and what it actually is always a great distance. And part of the work of peace and listening is to bring those two into accurate alignment all the time. So the way that I learned this, and actually this goes back because all of these things are instructions, and I think I talk about this in the Book of Awakening. And I was just simply after jogging, meeting a friend for lunch on a hot day like today when I was living in Albany, New York. So I was sitting on a bench, and a bee landed on near my arm. Now, you know, I grew up a city boy, and, you know, my mother was one of those, you know, urban suburban mothers who was, you know, afraid of bugs. And so, you know, I learned, and, you know, my right away my reflex is, oh, that's, the bee is dangerous, it could sting you, kill it. And for some reason, maybe because I was sweaty and exhausted and probably because I was older, I thought, that's an odd response. For the first time, I thought, wow, I am quite a bit bigger than this bee, and I have legs, and I can get up and move. So why don't we just wait and see what happens? And so sure enough, the bee came closer. And now I had a little adrenaline rush. Oh, this is frightening. But actually now I could see the bee more clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And now I had more information once I let it get closer than my initial ring of fear, because I could see its little stinger wasn't protruding.
Yeah.
So I knew that it wasn't bothered by me. And I still had time to get up and move away. And finally the bee landed on my arm, and I still was able to watch it. And then it flew away. And what that moment, that profoundly, and I happened to be, you know, we can't force revelation, but for whatever reason, I was open that day to see things differently. And a little bee was a great teacher. And there I was. Oh, when I first sat down, what I thought was my ring of safety was quite far around me. And as long as I maintained that, not only did I keep life away from me and I was not able to be touched by life, but I was also prone to violence.
Ah.
And the quiet courage, which is all these things we've been talking about, courage, risk, wakefulness, being present to the moment, these quiet courages, listening and letting life get close to us so that we can be touched by it, and therefore discover that we are all at heart the same. This is the beginning of peace. You know, it was Longfellow who said, if we truly, truly listen to our enemies' sufferings, they would no longer be our enemies.
I love that line.
That's amazing. And of course that's hard to do.
Yes.
But it's not about eliminating fear or reflex or worry. They will approach us. They will come over us like a fever or a chill or a sneeze. But that doesn't mean that we elevate them to a value or a philosophy of life or a worldview. And our very personal practice of being human, I have found, involves always the practice of return. Okay, I can feel afraid. And then I need to really see what is the accurate perspective of that fear. Where does it really sit in me, given the miracle of being here and that we're all at heart the same? And maybe sometimes it says, oh yeah, this is a big fear. This demands true caution.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, it's like the bee. It's not really necessary.
Helping us bring love to life today is Mark Nepo, best-selling author, poet. It's a joy to have him make a return visit here. We'll have much more of this delightful conversation right after a word from our sponsor.
Richard Brendon, Bringing Love to Life, is underwritten in part by Natural Awakenings magazine. Each month, Natural Awakenings takes a practical look at the latest natural approaches to nutrition, fitness, creative expression, personal growth, and sustainable living. The magazine also covers the products and services that support a healthy lifestyle. Natural Awakenings magazine is a free publication and can be found at most healthy lifestyle outlets. Their website is awakenindy.com.
Goddess Mountain Naturals crafts quality salves and balms intended to aid in healing and rejuvenation of the skin and body through properties provided by nature. The various salves help to moisturize your skin, soothe itching caused by bug bites and poison ivy. These salves have been found to ease pain from sore muscles and tendons and aid in the healing of cuts and scrapes. These are remedies that have been used for thousands of years. For more information, you can visit www.goddessmountain.com. That's goddessmountain.com.
Welcome back to the program. It's a joy to have best-selling author Mark Nepo with us. We've been talking about his book now, 7,000 Ways to Listen. And Mark, concerning that book, there's a section in that book called Keeping What is True Before Us. And you write in that book, "Now I want to learn the art of puncturing whatever grows in the way in order to feel that moment where everything touches everything else." You then say, "This tripping on what pricks us is an age-old process through which we often stumble into moments of being fully alive." Can you share why these moments of stumbling can actually be so incredibly powerful?
Well, you know, yes. I think that, you know, we are so taught to be afraid of the journey when there's no escaping the journey of being here on Earth. And it's only from living here on Earth that, you know, I think, you know, so many traditions ask us to go and find heaven. Mm-hmm. I don't think we find heaven on Earth. I think we reveal heaven on Earth by living here. And so we do stumble. You know, medieval monks, when asked how they practiced their faith, they said, by falling down and getting up. And so, you know, we many traditions speak about the wisdom of a broken / open heart. And, you know, in the Tibetan tradition, in the Tibetan mythology, a spiritual warrior, one who is committed to a life of transformation, mm-hmm. it's said that a spiritual warrior always has a crack in their heart, because that is how the mysteries get in.
And
in the Jewish tradition, and there's a story in the Talmud where in Deuteronomy, it said that God places his words on the heart. And so a rabbi, a student says to a rabbi, a very precocious student says, "Well, okay, well, tell me why, you know, if God's all-powerful and omnipotent, then why doesn't he just put the words in our heart?" Mm-hmm. And, you know, the rabbi says, "Oh, grasshopper," you know. He says, you know, because you, until you are opened by life, you will not even realize those words are there. You will step right over them. You will take them for granted. But when life opens you and cracks your heart a little, and you are now exposed, your innermost heart is exposed to the air, then God's words, like honey, will drip over the crack and soothe you, and you will really know the lightness of being that is divine. So this stumbling, you know, as much as we try to avoid it, it's like the way erosion makes nature beautiful, mm-hmm. reveals its inner beauty, and mm-hmm. this is kind of moving into Reduced to Joy. But, you know, the way that happens, we are worn to our inner beauty, and where everything extraneous is worn away. If we can survive the wearing away, which is another reason we need each other.
Yes. Yeah, there's that need for community so much. You know, another thing I love about this book is the stories you share, as well as the different highlighted teachings of some of the great spiritual teachers, such as Wayne Muller, who I just absolutely adore the writings that he does, and so many others. Would you say that you've had one particular favorite that has influenced you in your journey?
One particular story?
Yeah, or teacher.
Teacher. Yeah, well, you know, I think that, and that's a wonderful question. There are so many amazing teachers. You know, I think, you know, for me, one teacher is Abraham Heschel.
Oh, yes.
I think
yes.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing spirit. And as long as we're in the Jewish tradition, you know, Martin Buber, mm-hmm. And his teachings of I Thou. Wayne, as you speak, and I are very good friends, and he has an amazing vision of the nature of things. And, you know, I also think Pema Chodron as a contemporary is amazing. Jack Kornfield are amazing people. And, you know, I think, you know, Teilhard de Chardin, there are so many amazing people throughout the journey. I mean, there are some ancient, I mean, I love the Tao and Lao Tzu, and I love Chuang Tzu, the kind of crazy Taoist, and crazy wisdom there. And, you know, I've been looking at the work of Tung Shan, who was a Chan Buddhist in the 9th century. Mm-hmm. And this is a beautiful story, which is actually going in the next book, which is it won't be out probably for another year, but it's going to be called The Endless Practice.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, thank you. And this is a very touching story. It's so, you know, in this period of history in China, Tung Shan, he had a master who he had become friends with, who was older than him, like a half generation or so, and his master's name was Yun Yen, and we know this from Tung Shan's letters and writings. And he was walking along one day with his master, and suddenly, in silence, he stopped, and he said to him, put his arm around him, and he said, when you are gone, when you die, what do you want me to say to others about you? Mm-hmm. And Yun Yen looked at him for a long time in silence, and he put his arm on his shoulders, and he said, say just this person. And Tung Shan wasn't sure what he meant, and they walked along in silence further. And then Yun Yen stopped and said, you must be very careful because you are carrying a very great matter. And they never talked about it again. And then when later in years to come, when Yun Yen died in his grief, it was said that Tung Shan was crossing a stream, and he saw his reflection and the reflection of all humanity in the stream, and it's then that he thought he understood what his master meant, and he wrote after that if you look outside of yourself for the truth, you will be very far away. This is a very, I think, interesting and compelling story that almost seems like a riddle, but how it touches me is that, you know, that what Yun Yen was saying is that we are each here to be the person, the particular person we were born to be, not more, not less. You know, so much of our journey, we inflate ourselves or we deflate ourselves. But to be the particular person that experience wears us to. So he didn't say to be no person. He didn't say, talk about me as a great teacher. He said, I'm just not just a person, I'm this, just this person. And then what Tung Shan seems to take from it is not that, you know, if you go farther outside of yourself, you won't find the truth. Not that the only way you can find the truth is from your particular self. But what we've been talking about, that from that spot, that's the well of spirit in each of us, we drink from all spirit. And it's only through that authenticity that we can touch on the essence of all life.
My guest today is Mark Nepo, poet, philosopher, best-selling author. We've been talking about several of his books. We've been addressing 7,000 Ways to Listen. In our final segment, we'll be talking about his newest book, Reduced to Joy. This is The Richard Brendan Show. We'll be right back after a short break. Thank you. Welcome back to the program. It's a joy to have a return visit from best-selling author and philosopher Mark Nepo. And Mark, you mentioned Wayne Muller. He actually wrote the foreword to your newest book, Reduced to Joy. Your newest book of poetry has one of my favorite words in the title, and that's joy. I mean, what a powerful emotion joy is. It's one of those that invokes healing, I think. So how was Reduced to Joy conceived? Was there a particular experience that compelled you to use that title in this book?
Well, I think, you know, it's in this line of this journey that my experience has brought me to. And, you know, as I was saying earlier, that, you know, the one book leads to the next teaching and learning. And it's as if, you know, all the books, whether they're poetry or nonfiction or fiction, whatever they might be, I think at this point in my life, it's kind of like I go to the ocean of being with a bucket, and when I fill the bucket, it's a book, and then I go back, and so, you know, it's all the same water, just, you know, fill different buckets worth. and so this bucket, you know, has really... You know, they're poems over, I'm 62, and I'd say these are poems from the last 12 or 13 years. Mm-hmm. And they do center around, you know, joy to me I agree with you, joy is such a life-giving and resource of resilience. And so what is joy? You know, I think, you know, joy is different than happiness to me. I think I'm starting to believe and understand that that... If we, and again, to use an ocean as a metaphor, that if happiness and confusion and all of the thousand moods and feelings, they're all waves. Well, I think joy is the ocean of being that holds all the waves.
Mm.
Yeah, I think that's, and so, you know, as I was saying earlier, I mean, that we are reduced to joy, that image comes from, you know, watching, I was in, several years ago, I was in Barbados, and on the northern part of that island, there are these amazing cliffs that have been worn by the sea because it's where the Caribbean and the Atlantic meet. Mm-hmm. So it's very rough water, and they're called the hollows because this whole face of the island has just been hollowed out, and it's beautiful. And I think, you know, that was the seed of this image because... Life wears us away, as I said earlier, of everything that's extraneous.
Mm-hmm.
And what's left is wonder and joy.
Mm.
So this is really about, you know, these poems are the kind of human journey of how do we lean into life and work with what we're given until we're reduced to joy.
I like that. You know, two of my favorite quotes from the book, which you've also quoted on your Facebook page, are, the first one is, "Violins are falling from the sky. As they tumble, the wind releases deep music. This is how love sounds to itself." And this one I love because it just resonates beautifully and I think calls forth this image in my mind. And the other one was, "What if pain, the kind that opens a fist, is really the tap of an angel, saving us from ourselves?" That one really makes you think.
Yeah, those are from two different poems. The first one is actually a short love poem for my wife Susan, and I do think that, you know, that second image is in a I think it's in a poem called "Holding the Gun."
Yes,
and you know, again, it's this. You know, as we connect some of the things we've talked about, so in our fear, when our fear is exaggerated and we're so ready to promote violence and we think we're protecting ourselves,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's the stumble, it's the hit over the head by life that makes us drop the weapon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that makes us, I think a line in there is something about, you know, that, you know, if we're lucky, we will slip and cut ourselves and bleed on our list of grievances, and it won't be clear why we're upset anymore.
How
and, you know, I know this because I experience all this. It's the journey of being human. Again, it's not that, you know, none of us are going to be saints where or the cartoon of a saint, I should say, where we're never going to feel anger, we're never going to feel fear, we're never going to feel like we want to strike out to protect ourselves. No, we will feel these things, and the courage of spirit and of an open heart is that we recover from these things, and if we've made a mess, we clean up the mess and we make amends. You know, the word saint comes from the Sanskrit sant, S-A-N-T, which simply means truth seeker. Truth seeker.
Do you have, by chance, this book with you right now, Reduced to
Joy? Yes, I do.
Could you turn to page 35? And the poem I'd like for you to read for us is Kiss Everything on Fire.
Thank you.
It was hard to choose. They're all beautifully written, so maybe the fire element in Journey's Fire spoke to me. But if you could read that for us and then just make a comment on it.
Sure. Thank you. Kiss everything on fire. Everyone keeps stopping me with their urgency, as if the secret of life was written in a corner of their mind, and before they could read it, it burst aflame. The first 100 times I rushed to do their bidding. Then one day, exhausted by my own secrets burning, I stopped running and kissed everything on fire. And yes, it scarred my lip, and now I have trouble saying anything complicated, but wind no longer gets trapped in my head. I know you understand. I've seen you suffer the secrets no one asked us to keep secret. I've seen them burning up in your mind, but today we can part the veils and let in whatever it is we thought we had to keep out. Today, urgency dies because the heart has burned its excuses.
Can you talk
and
about
that? You
know, that?
There's, you know, what that leads me to say here is that this is another paradox or part of the journey, the archetypal journey of life, is that we, you know, we either run into the fire or we run from the fire. And, you know, the archetypal myth of you know, Icarus, who, you know, Daedalus was his father, and Icarus wanted to, he wanted to touch the sun, and you know, his father made wings of wax by which he could fly close to the sun, and other than it being a bad plan,
yes,
you know, he, of course, as he got close to the sun, the wings of wax melted, and he drowned. He fell into the sea. But the point of that, the symbol of that, which is so archetypal, is we are not meant to touch the sun. We are meant to be in the light. We are not meant to be the sun. We are not meant to be God. We are meant to be in God's light. And yes, there's a deep part of us that is of God, is of light, is of sun. And, you know, this was another tremendous lesson for me when, years ago when I first went into the Rocky Mountains and I really wanted to drive to the Continental Divide, and I was surprised. I got up close, and it was hard to drive because I was feeling dizzy. And I stopped, and I went and sat among some rocks looking out on this tremendous precipice. And it was awesome, literally awesome. And then after a while, it was cold, and it was barren, and it was uncomfortable. And I felt like suddenly the air and the canyon and the mountain, because I was above the tundra line, where nothing would grow. And it's as if these magnificent forces said to me, yes, it's good that you came now. Go back among the living where you belong. You don't belong up here. You can come up here and be in wonder, but go back. Go back and take what you have felt among the living. Wow. That was quite a surprise.
I bet it was. And speaking of joy, it is always a joy for me to read your books. You're such a gift, I think, to this world and quite the wordsmith, and I also appreciate you taking the time to always come on this program. And by the way, a couple things. You're going to be on Oprah's Super Soul Sunday coming up, I think October 13th and 20th, is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a real... this summer I was invited wonderfully to film these two episodes in Maui with Oprah.
Oh,
which
wow.
Is, quite an additional treat.
Yes.
And yeah, so this will be part of the new fall summer Super Soul Sunday TV series on
okay.
OWN. And it was quite... we fell into quite a deep conversation.
That's beautiful, and I want to encourage our listeners to check that out. And also, to follow your work, I believe the website is marknepo.com, is that correct?
Yes, and there's a sister website, 3intentions.com, spelled out, mm-hmm. that also has my work and where I'll be teaching and speaking as well.
Mm. Mark Nepo, it's always a joy to have you with us. Thank you for sharing your time.
Oh, thank you very much.
Blessings. I'll share a closing thought, but first, here's Sarah McLachlan.
Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, darkness, there is sadness, joy. Oh, divine master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console. Understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it's a given that we receive, and it's important that we.
Mark Nepo writes this in his book, The 7,000 Ways to Listen. In very real ways, we're drawn to what we need to learn. Often it waits like a quiet blessing that we can easily ignore or just as easily open ourselves to, like that small wildflower. But for the soul to blossom, we must accept our deeper, humbler destiny. For the wildflower doesn't become rich or famous from blossoming. It doesn't live forever or become the greatest flower of all time. The wildflower's reward for trusting what it senses but doesn't yet know is to become what it was born to be, a flower whose inevitable place is realized in a small moment of oneness as it joins with elements that were here before it came alive, in which will live on once it dies. This is the reward for every seed growing in the dark with no sense of what it will become. As a soul on earth, this is all we can hope for, to feel the light and being of all time course through our veins while we blossom. And that's today's program. I want to thank you so much for sharing your time with us. Our website is richardbrendan.org. This has been a Journeys Fire production. And so for engineer Joe Bainline and production coordinator Monica Tennell, I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing love to life, one broadcast at a time.